It is the determination of the Bulletin's Science and Security Board that humanity has not made sufficient progress on the existential risks that endanger us all. We thus move the clock forward. The doomsday clock is a tool for communicating how close we are to destroying the world with technologies of our own making. The risks we face from nuclear weapons, climate change, and disruptive technologies are all growing. Every second counts, and we are running out of time. It is a hard truth, but this is our reality. It is now 85 seconds to midnight. This is the closest the world has ever been to midnight.
Well, if that isn't a cheery way to start the show, I don't know what is.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
Why?
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No,
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the broadcast as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA and on dozens of other fine affiliate stations on both the public airwaves and the internet around the country and the world, blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me. From bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us for another thrilling and apparently cheery edition of the Bradcast. Now, by the way, officially in our 23rd year of listener and reader supported troublemaking and muckraking journalism, as we officially celebrate this week bradblog.com's 22nd anniversary at the blog this week.
Well, happy anniversary.
Thank you, and back at you, Desi Doyen.
And thanks to everyone for taking this voyage with us.
Thank you very much for hanging on with all you can at this point.
Hold fast.
Now, as you heard at the top of the show there from the president and CEO of the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists, Alexandra Bell, Earth is now closer than it has ever been to destruction as Russia, China, the U.S., and other countries become, quote, increasingly aggressive, adversarial, and nationalistic, according to the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists on Tuesday morning as it advanced its notorious doomsday clock to 85 seconds till midnight. The Bulletin scientists cited risks of nuclear war, climate change, potential misuse of biotechnology, and the increasing use of artificial intelligence without adequate controls as it made the annual announcement for the doomsday clock, which rates how close humanity is from ending. Last year, the clock advanced to 89 seconds to midnight. This year, it's 85. Since then, quote, hard-won global understandings are collapsing, the group said, accelerating a winner-take-all great power competition and undermining the international cooperation needed to reduce existential risks. They worry about the threat of escalating conflicts involving nuclear-armed countries, citing the Russia-Ukraine war, May's conflict between India and Pakistan, and whether Iran is now capable of developing nuclear weapons. Quote, in June, Israel and the United States launched aerial attacks on Iranian nuclear facilities suspected of supporting the country's nuclear weapons ambitions, the Bulletin writes today, adding, quote, it remains unclear whether the attacks constrained those efforts or they instead persuaded the country to pursue nuclear weapons covertly. Meanwhile, competition among major powers has become a full-blown arms race, as evidenced by increasing numbers of nuclear warheads and platforms in China and the modernization of nuclear delivery systems in the United States and Russia, the group said. As we publish this statement, they note, the last major agreement limiting the number of strategic nuclear weapons deployed by the U.S. and Russia, called New START, is actually set to expire, ending nearly 60 years of efforts to constrain nuclear competition between the world's two largest nuclear countries. In addition, the U.S. administration may be considering the resumption of explosive nuclear testing, further accelerating a renewed nuclear arms race. Boy, a bunch of Debbie Downers over there at the Bulletin for Atomic Scientists, eh? They write, quote, in the U.S., the Trump administration has essentially declared war on renewable energy and sensible climate policies, relentlessly gutting national efforts to combat climate change. The scientists note that the level of atmospheric carbon dioxide, the greenhouse gas most responsible for human-caused climate change, has reached a new high, rising to 150% of pre-industrial levels, noting that the global average temperature in 2024 was the warmest in the 175-year record, and temperatures in 2025 were similar. The scientists go on to cite actions that could help to pull the world back from the brink, well, there's an idea, including, quote, the United States Congress can repudiate President Trump's war on renewable energy, instead providing incentives and investments that will enable rapid reduction in fossil fuel use. Well, good luck with that. On the other hand, we actually do have some encouraging news and encouraging ruling in our Green News Report with Desi Doyen a bit later today from the courts regarding Trump's unlawful efforts to claw back billions of dollars in funding for a national EV electric vehicle charging network enacted by Democrats under President Joe Biden. So the news is not all bad today, not by a long shot. Just most of it. Not really. Quote one more from the bulletin here. Quote, our current trajectory is unsustainable, the group concludes in their statement, noting, quote, national leaders, particularly those in the United States, Russia, and China, must take the lead in finding a path away from the brink. Citizens must insist they do so, before adding, it is 85 seconds to midnight. Other than that, happy news. Welcome to the broadcast. And we actually do have, as I said, some happy news for you today. Some happier than others, all of which, as usual, should keep you on guard, however, as there appears to be no bottom that the Trump administration is not happy to dig even deeper beyond in their depraved, degenerate, attempted takeover of these United States and our Constitution and the rule of law. But if Americans are proving anything, it is that they can fight back peacefully. And they can even win this fight, whether that fight means the exercise of constitutionally protected speech and a free press, rights that we enjoy liberally and responsibly each day on this program, by organized or not so organized protests in the streets, by organized or not so organized exercise of our right to vote and to hold our elected officials to account, and of course our rights to hold bad actors to account in a court of law. We're going to hit all of those a little bit today, I suspect. But as we spent some time on yesterday's program lauding the courageous, unflappable folks fighting all of those good fights all at once right now in Minneapolis as their city remains under violent, murderous siege by the United States government under the degenerate control of Donald J. Trump, let's begin with what appears to be really the first glimmer of victory for the good people of Minneapolis and Minnesota as a whole. Now, this story had actually begun to break yesterday just before airtime for our show, but it had yet to be confirmed, and I did not want to get too far ahead of things in an otherwise volatile situation up there in Minneapolis following the murder of Veterans Affairs Intensive Care Unit nurse and American citizen Alex Preddy by immigration officials as Preddy was attempting to render aid to a woman assaulted by those officials during one of their supposed crackdowns in the Twin Cities area. So I don't want to say, as I've seen, frankly, many do over the past 24 hours or so, that the folks of Minnesota have won, that this is over, because I don't think that things are over there. Not yet, not by a long shot, but I think I do feel more comfortable saying today that the people of Minnesota, and specifically the folks of Minneapolis and the surrounding Twin Cities region, are at least winning. Donald Trump is definitely backing down at least somewhat, which he rarely does, but he is doing here. What that means for folks on the front lines in Minneapolis, well, that remains to be seen. But I believe former Washington Post reporter Nick Miroff, now at The Atlantic, was the first to break the story on Monday that, as Miroff reported it, the so-called commander-at-large of Customs and Border Patrol, Gregory Bovino, has been removed from his role and will return to his former job in El Centro, California, where he is expected to retire soon. So sad. What Miroff described as Bovino's sudden demotion is the clearest sign yet. He said that the Trump administration is reconsidering its most aggressive tactics after the killing Saturday of 37-year-old Alex Preti under Bovino's command. Earlier on Monday, Trump appeared to signal in a series of social media posts a tactical shift in the administration's mass deportation campaign, writing that he spoke with Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, whom the White House has blamed for inciting violence, which is ridiculous. And the two men are now on, quote, a similar wavelength, said Donald Trump suddenly. Tom Homan, the former ICE chief who Trump has designated as border czar, he will head to Minnesota, reported Miroff yesterday, to assume command of the federal mobilization there, according to Trump. And now Homan has reportedly, in fact, arrived in Minnesota, which, of course, you know, could merely suggest a rotation of villains at this point with ratings down and all.
Good point.
So, again, even today, I greet this news with caution and the usual amount of skepticism, but still the signs are encouraging. Moreover, as Miroff reported, Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem and her close advisor, oh, that's what we call it now, Corey Lewandowski, who were Bovino's biggest backers at DHS, they are also at risk of losing their jobs, according to Miroff. At least according to two of his sources. For the past 7 months, he notes, Bovino has been the public face of a traveling immigration crackdown on cities governed by Democrats. Noem and other Trump officials gave Bovino the commander title and sent him and his masked border agents to Chicago, Charlotte, New Orleans, then Minneapolis. Bovino became a MAGA social media star as he traveled the country with his own film crew and used social media to lash out at Democratic politicians and random critics online. And, of course, yes, to lie about immigration officials' habits of, you know, shooting American citizens dead execution style under his command in Minneapolis. Over the weekend, Bovino notoriously took to the cameras to lie about the killing of Alex Preti, describing him as attacking ICE officials and CBP officials and brandishing a weapon at them, resulting in his killing as an act of self-defense by these federal agents. None of that, none of it turned out to be true, as quickly revealed by multiple videotapes of the event, even when Bovino was attempting to walk back a bit of his clearly false claims made after the shooting on Saturday. He just couldn't help but lie about what had happened in remarks on Sunday. On Sunday, while backing off his initial false claims that Preti was brandishing, quote, brandishing a weapon and assaulting officers, Bovino said that moments before Preti's death, the agents had been seeking to detain an Ecuadorian migrant with a criminal record that included domestic assault and disorderly conduct. Well, in fact, the Minnesota Department of Corrections disputed those claims in a statement, saying that the man referred to there had never been in custody and that his criminal history consisted of only a misdemeanor traffic offense from more than a decade ago. So even when Bovino was trying to back off of his original lies, that Alex Preti was a would-be assassin attacking federal officials and brandishing a gun, well, Bovino managed to come up with a whole new pack of lies, it seems. And now, if the reporting of the past 24 hours or so bears out, as it seems like it may, Bovino will be removed from his post and hopefully become yesterday's news, at least until the new Reconstruction criminal trials begin. This, opines TPM's Josh Kavinsky, is a real victory for protesters in Minneapolis and those opposed to the Trump administration's strategy of surging federal law enforcement into largely Democratic cities. Since the strategy began in Los Angeles in June last year, Bovino's departure marks the first time that the administration has retreated under public pressure. Bovino notes Kavinsky has been a showman of mass detentions, both of migrants slated for removal from the country and for U.S. citizens who found themselves in his way. As recently as this week, Bovino was defending Preti's death by smearing him as having intended to commit a, quote, massacre. In one appearance over the weekend, Bovino emphasized that likening him to the Gestapo would invite, quote, consequences. Really? Is that right, Greg? Bovino's leadership of the highly visible federal crackdowns, including operations that sparked mass demonstrations in Los Angeles, Chicago, Charlotte, and Minneapolis, has drawn fierce criticism from local officials, civil rights advocates, and congressional Democrats, notes AP. Bovino's departure, as AP reports it, accompanies a softer tone from Trump on the Minnesota crackdown, including the president's touting of productive conversations with the governor and Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey, both of whom had previously and repeatedly been blamed by Trump and others in the administration for the situation in Minneapolis. The mayor said that he asked Trump in a phone call to end the immigration enforcement surge, and Trump agreed that the present situation cannot continue. Mayor Frey said that he would keep pushing for others involved in Operation Metro Surge to leave the city, as Tom Homan will take charge of immigration and customs enforcement operations in Minnesota. Frey said that he planned to meet with him on Tuesday, as did Governor Walz. We don't know the final destination of Bovino's retreat at this point, what all of this means for the administration's broader strategy of surging federal law enforcement into cities one at a time, that all remains to be seen. But I do agree, it is a victory, even if we, the people's war for these United States, is not yet fully won by a long shot. But it is a victory, and the folks of Minneapolis are to be thanked and congratulated.
Yes.
Other signs of matters falling apart for the administration up there in Minnesota. In court, the chief federal judge in Minnesota says the Trump administration has failed to comply with orders to hold hearings for detained immigrants and has ordered the head of ICE to appear before him on Friday to explain why he should not be held in contempt. In an order dated Monday, the chief judge of the U.S. District Court for the District of Minnesota, Judge Patrick J. Schiltz, he's an appointee of George W. Bush, he said that Todd Lyons, the acting director of ICE, must appear personally in court. The judge took the administration to task over its handling of bond hearings for immigrants that it has detained. So not only are they violently rounding these people up, not only are they violating the Fourth Amendment by breaking into their homes and kidnapping them in the middle of the night, they're not even apparently giving them hearings in court that they are due. Quote, this court has been extremely patient with respondents, even though respondents decided to send thousands of agents to Minnesota to detain aliens without making any provision for dealing with the hundreds of habeas petitions and other lawsuits that were sure to result, the judge wrote. Quote, this is one of dozens of court orders with which respondents have failed to comply in recent weeks, wrote the judge. The practical consequences of respondents' failure to comply has almost always been significant hardship to aliens, many of whom have lawfully lived and worked in the United States for years and done absolutely nothing wrong, he noted. The detention of an alien is extended, or an alien who should remain in Minnesota is flown to Texas, or an alien who has been flown to Texas is released there and told to figure out a way to go home, said the judge. The court's patience is now at an end, he added. Accordingly, the court will order Todd Lyons, the acting director of ICE, to appear personally before the court and show cause why he should not be held in contempt of court. That's a serious business, by the way. Schiltz wrote that he recognizes ordering the head of a federal agency to appear personally is extraordinary, but, quote, the extent of ICE's violation of court orders is likewise extraordinary, and lesser measures have been tried and failed, he said. Respondents have continually assured the court that they recognize their obligation to comply with court orders and that they have taken steps to ensure that those orders will be honored going forward, he wrote. Unfortunately, though, the violations continue, he said. The order in this case lists the petitioner by name and last initial as Juan T.R. It says the court granted a petition for him on January 14 to provide him with a bond hearing within 7 days. But on January 23, which would be 9 days later, the man's lawyer told the court that the petitioner was still detained. Court documents show that the petitioner is a citizen of Ecuador who came to the U.S. around 1999. The hearing is for the acting director of ICE is currently set for 2 p.m. on Friday, but the judge noted that it will be canceled if the government frees the petitioner in this particular case from detention before then. And all of this comes as even Republicans appear to be turning against the Trump administration, at least somewhat, regarding what happened in the wake of the killing of Alex Priddy. Following the ICE murder of the 37-year-old Renee Good just weeks before it, governors, Republican governors, and members of Congress appear to be saying some version of enough is enough, or at least this is unsustainable, as congressional Democrats step up to oppose any more new funding for DHS and ICE without restrictions placed on their behavior along with it. That, even as we now barrel toward yet another partial government shutdown deadline on Friday, which now kind of seems inevitable at the moment, until Republicans agree to include guardrails on that funding, and that will require the U.S. House having come back in session after Mike Johnson sent them home for another week's recess. And all of that follows on a pathetic statement shortly after the killing of Priddy by Donald Trump's horrific, monstrous U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi, who sent a letter to Minnesota officials on Saturday, apparently just after the murder of Alex Priddy. Among the things that Bondi claims, quote, will help bring back law and order to Minnesota and improve the lives of Americans, unquote, is for Minnesota to release its voter rolls to the DOJ, which, as UCLA voting rights and election law expert Rick Hassan observes, will no doubt be used to fabricate more false claims of widespread voter fraud in order to justify more restrictive voting rules. In her mob-style letter to the state of Minnesota, Bondi demanded, in exchange for the removal of militarized U.S. immigration officials in Minneapolis, quote, that the state allow the Civil Rights Division of the Department of Justice to access voter rolls to confirm that Minnesota's voter registration practices comply with federal law as authorized by the Civil Rights Act of 1960. Fulfilling this common sense request, she said, will better guarantee free and fair elections and boost confidence in the rule of law, or we will kill more Minnesotans, including U.S. citizens. Yeah, she actually didn't say that last part, but she might as well have.
True.
Hassan at his election law blog notes in response, quote, this is outrageous, reprehensible. It suggests but doesn't quite promise an ICE stand down in exchange for access to the voting rolls and meeting other DOJ demands, like a list of people who receive SNAP nutrition benefits. It shows, he says, it shows ICE is not in Minneapolis for law enforcement or immigration purposes. They are there to stir up a word that I can't use here on the on FCC radio, but they are there to stir it up in blue states and try to extort those states, or at least to win a battle in American public opinion about what is necessary to curb illegal immigration. It is not accomplishing that goal, to be clear, notes Hassan. These demands are especially disgusting, he says, in the wake of the apparent unwarranted shooting and killing of a peaceful protester that very same day in Minneapolis. So, yeah, as usual, we see all of this coming back to elections. And the violence, the murder, the death will stop if you let us see your voting rolls and use them to restrict people from being able to vote. It all comes back to elections. As I've been saying for, I don't know, just about exactly 22 years now at bradblog.com and on this program. And to that end, let's take a quick break and we'll come back with some related election news that, nope, Pam Bondi is not going to like. Sorry, Pam. That's all straight ahead, along with Desi Doyen and the Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman, and this is The Bradcast.
The Bradcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener-supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. Please drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
You gotta fight!
Welcome back. It's the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. That song has something to do with this this segment somehow or another, as well as the Democratic Party is fighting for their right to party in elections. But first, I want to pick up here after the killing of Alex Pretty by federal immigration thugs on the street of Minneapolis last Saturday. Donald Trump, his obscenely corrupt U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi, was notifying Minnesota officials in this, as I said, mobster-style letter. Actually, Minnesota Secretary of State Steve Simon calls it a ransom note. She was notifying state officials that the murdering of state residents by U.S. immigration officials would stop, essentially, only if and when the state turned over its state voting rolls to the federal government.
So that's kind of like Bondi saying, this is about taking violent, illegal immigrant criminals off the street. Unless you give us the voter rolls, we'll go away and leave the criminals in place.
Yeah, exactly.
It makes no sense.
Makes no sense. But
because it's depraved and wrong.
Yeah, and when has this administration ever made sense?
The fruit of the poison tree, as it is.
Here, in any event, is Secretary Steve Simon, Secretary of State Steve Simon from Minnesota, on CNN on Monday night explaining the state's response to that demand.
Well, here's what they want. They don't just want the public stuff, which anyone can get, name, address, voting history, stuff like that. What they want is very personal, private, sensitive data on millions of people, namely social security numbers, driver's license numbers, military service history where applicable. Why they want it? That's a good question. That's sort of key to the legal arguments here. Our legal position all along before this weekend ransom note from the Attorney General was that state and federal law don't permit them to get this data. And so what she's basically asking us for in this letter is to hand something over, which we think the law precludes her from getting under these circumstances.
So Minnesota is one of about 23 states that have been sued by Pam Bondi and the Justice Department to try and get these voter rolls. That suit plays out in court, in federal court in Minnesota now. But even as she was sending that threat letter over the weekend, yet another federal judge in a different state was preparing to tell Bondi to get lost. A federal judge in Oregon on Monday dismissed a Justice Department lawsuit seeking that state's unredacted voter rolls in yet another setback to these wide-ranging efforts by the Trump administration to get detailed voter data from states, including, as you heard, private information like Social Security numbers, which are not generally given out except for very, very rare circumstances. I can get access to Oregon or Minnesota's voter data if I want to pay for it, but I can only have, you know, certain information, not the personal information like their Social Security numbers. In a hearing, U.S. District Judge Mustafa Kasubai, pardon me, Judge, for getting that name wrong, said that he would dismiss the DOJ's suit against Oregon, a move welcomed by the Oregon Attorney General Dan Rayfield. Quote, the court dismissed the case because the federal government never met the legal standard to get these records in the first place, said the AG of Oregon. Oregonians deserve to know that voting laws can't be used as a backdoor to grab their personal information. The judge scheduled the hearing after U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi sent her letter to Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, dated on Saturday, the same day that the federal immigration agents shot the 37-year-old ICU nurse, Alex Preddy. In her letter, Bondi shared, quote, simple steps to, quote, help bring back law and order, including by giving the Justice Department the ability to access voter rolls. So the Department of Justice will only bring back law and order if you give us those voter rolls. Other than that, we're not interested in law and order since we're the ones who are violating it. The Justice Department has filed lawsuits against at least 23 states, as noted, and the District of Columbia, part of its effort to collect such data. Last week, a federal judge in Georgia dismissed Bondi's suit there after ruling that the federal government had sued in the wrong city. And as we reported earlier this month, a federal judge in California dismissed the DOJ lawsuit for the voter rolls there, here, after finding that the government's request was, quote, unprecedented and illegal. The department has said it needs to access detailed voter data to ensure election officials are following federal election laws. Election officials have disputed that, and they have raised concerns that the federal officials are trying to use the sensitive data for other purposes, such as searching for potential non-citizens on the rolls. But here's the thing. As we detailed last week, I think it was, after reviewing some 40 million such records across the country in a whole bunch of states, officials have yet to find any evidence of widespread voting fraud by non-citizens in any state. And we went through some of the cases that were found around the U.S. In a story last week. And in state after state, county after county, jurisdiction after jurisdiction, they found next to no one who was a non-citizen on the voter rolls. And today, we've got still more evidence of that from yet another state. This, as reported by the Democracy Docket on Friday, they note after a sweeping Republican-led review of more than 2 million voter registrations, Utah election officials identified just one apparent non-citizen in their voter rolls. One non-citizen, they note, who never actually voted.
What were those numbers again?
One.
Now, I'm no math whiz, but I'm pretty sure that's not very many.
No, it is not. Not out of 2 million voter registrations in the state. The results sharply undercut the narrative of widespread non-citizen voting that Republicans use to promote new nationwide restrictions on voting. The finding comes as Republicans in Congress renew their push for the so-called SAVE Act, a bill that would require voters to show proof of citizenship to register to vote in federal elections. Not just, you know, voter ID to prove a driver's license, I am who I say I am, but actually proof of citizenship now. They're now moving the goalposts for that. And as the all of this, as the Trump administration's DOJ intensifies efforts to obtain those voter rolls from states nationwide, a fight, as previously noted, that they are now losing in federal court in state after state. According to the Utah Lieutenant Governor, Deirdre Henderson, who in Utah, the Lieutenant Governor is actually the state's chief election official, not a Secretary of State there. But according to the Lieutenant Governor, the months-long review, a great use of state resources, by the way, examined 2,069,640 active voter registrations using state driver's license records, federal immigration databases, and manual verification. Yet more than 99.9% of voters were confirmed, in fact, to be U.S. citizens. The lone non-citizen identified was removed from the rolls and was confirmed to have never voted. Election officials said hundreds of other records flagged during the process actually reflected missing information or data errors, not in fact evidence of any illegal voting. And here again, we see the problem with allowing amateurs like Pam Bondi and her right-wing voter fraudster pals to examine this data. They'll flag all kinds of things, make all kinds of claims, and then when you look at it, it's like, oh no, it was just missing data. It was a problem with the database. It was... Anyway, those cases that were found, the other issues, the four non-citizens, for example, and the hundreds of records that were flagged because of missing data, those cases were linked to a now fixed issue in the voter registration system in Utah that allowed applicants to proceed even after indicating that they were not, in fact, U.S. citizens. All four of those previously identified as non-citizens were promptly removed from the voter rolls at the time. And the state election director, Ryan Cowley, said that that investigators were still determining whether any of them actually cast ballots. As I've explained over and over and over the years, sometimes, rarely, but sometimes non-citizens do end up on the rolls because they're handed a stack of documents, for example, at the DMV to fill out while they're getting a driver's license lawfully. They fill out all the documents and they don't even realize that they became registered to vote because the clerk handed them the registration form without realizing they weren't supposed to. It's rare, but it does happen. And it almost never results in a vote cast, much less an epidemic of millions of unlawful non-citizen voters casting ballots, as Donald Trump and Fox News and the other right-wing voter fraud fraudsters have been claiming for years and years. The results, according to Democracy Docket out of Utah, are a devastating rebuttal to the central premise that the Republicans' SAVE Act, that large numbers of non-citizens are registering and voting undetected somehow. This news rebuts that, despite the claim repeatedly invoked by Republican lawmakers. And even after this information, Senator Mike Lee, Republican from Utah, even after it was found, you know, previously that there were four non-citizens on the roll, Mike Lee came out and said, well, four is too many. This on Twitter. Please save ASAP, referring to the to the SAVE Act. So yeah, four is too many, but he is apparently willing to prevent hundreds of thousands of perfectly lawful voters from being able to register and vote in order to block four non-citizens from voting who do not even appear to have done so in any event.
I would venture to say that he's not only willing to prevent hundreds of thousands of voters, that's his goal.
It might be. The report also comes amid a standoff between Utah and the Justice Department over access to that state's voter rolls. Yes, Republican Utah was in fact one of the states who refused to go along with Pam Bondi and the DOJ's demand for full voting rolls. In December, DOJ officials demanded that Utah provide its full unredacted voter database as part of that nationwide campaign. Utah officials pushed back, like California did, like Oregon did, like Georgia, and dozens of other states, like Minnesota, citing, yes, privacy concerns, data risks, security risks, and conflicting legal obligations where the state says, no, you can't release a resident's social security number. In communications with the DOJ, the state emphasized that it already conducts regular voter list maintenance in Utah, as do all states, by the way, including address updates, duplicate checks, removals of deceased voters, they note, and in the case of Utah, the use of a federal immigration database to verify citizenship. Voting rights advocates have long warned that strict proof of citizenship requirements risk disenfranchising eligible voters who lack easy access to matching documents like passports or birth certificates, including, for example, married women who may have a different name now than they do on their birth certificate, elderly voters, rural residents. In announcing the findings last week, Utah's lieutenant governor took aim at the Trump administration's use of that federal immigration database to find non-citizens on the rolls. She called the system, quote, notoriously inaccurate, and added that it, quote, frequently flags individuals who are, in fact, citizens. She's referring to that immigration database that is also called the SAVE database that has a whole bunch of people listed. You might look them up, find them as non-citizens, and it is not up to date because many of them have since become, yes, naturalized citizens. One more election-related story today as we, the people, continue our eyes to keep our eyes on the only real solution to all of these nightmares that we're facing under the violent, malevolent, unlawful, corrupt domination of the Trump administration. This one also from Democracy Docket late last week, as a new front appears to be opening in the gerrymandering wars started last summer by Donald Trump and his strong-arming first the state of Texas and other GOP states to redistrict their U.S. House maps in the middle of the decade in advance of this year's midterms in hopes of gerrymandering Democrats out of Congress and essentially stealing their seats to try and retain the Republicans' narrow control of the House. Maryland Democrats are now pushing back against that effort, taking the next steps towards redrawing their state's congressional map this year, including legislation introduced to try and balance out Republicans' gerrymandered gains in other states. Members of the Maryland House of Delegates introduced a measure on Friday outlining a plan for the new map. The lower chamber's Rules Committee was scheduled to hold a hearing on the bill this week. Democrats currently hold 7 of Maryland's 8 congressional seats. So we're talking about an effort to flip one Republican seat to Democratic. But last year, Trump launched a redistricting arms race, notes Democracy Docket, by pressuring GOP-controlled states, including Texas, Missouri, North Carolina, and others, to redo their maps to tilt the midterm elections this year in Republicans' favor. Governor Ron DeSantis down in Florida announced that that state will take up redistricting in an April special session. So there is more still to come from the Republican side. Democratic-controlled states, including California and Virginia, we've got some news on that in a moment, but California and Virginia have moved to redraw their maps in response. Maryland's Democratic Governor Wes Moore has pushed to redraw the state despite some opposition from members of his own party, with the governor arguing that eliminating the state's one Republican congressional district is a necessary move to counter what Trump is doing. Moore formed a redistricting advisory commission some months ago that voted last week to recommend a new congressional map to the Maryland General Assembly. And actually, when he created that advisory commission, I thought that was his way of saying, yeah, we're never going to do this. But yeah, apparently the commission came back and said, yeah, we should do this. Despite Moore's support now for a redraw, the Maryland Senate President, Bill Ferguson, a fellow Democrat, made his opposition to redistricting clear some months ago, saying it would be too risky for Democrats. That was back in October, however, which is like 1,000 years ago now. Since then, California voters have overwhelmingly adopted a constitutional measure at the ballot box to redraw the Golden State map here, to essentially write out of existence about 5 Republican seats here in the state in response to what Texas did. And Virginia lawmakers were elected last November with huge gains after they began the process to redraw their Commonwealth map to flip as many as 4 or even 5 seats from red to blue this year. Now, on that news, on that front, some news just before airtime today. A Virginia judge, not a federal judge, but a Commonwealth judge, has now ruled on Tuesday that a proposed constitutional amendment that the Democrats in the House of Delegates had been working on and in the state Senate that would let Democrats redraw the state's congressional maps, that in fact that effort was illegal, potentially foiling the effort to pick up seats in the U.S. House in November in Virginia. A Tazewell, Virginia circuit court judge struck down the legislature's actions on 3 grounds, ruling that lawmakers failed to follow their own rules for adding the redistricting amendment to a special session, failed to approve the amendment before the public began voting in last year's general election, and failed to publish the amendment 3 months before the election, as required by law, according to the judge. As a result, he said the amendment was invalid and void. Now, I am not sure from my quick read, as I said, this just broke a few minutes ago. I'm not sure from my end that the judge got it right, but we will see. Virginians for Fair Elections, which supports the redistricting effort, said in a statement that it expects an appeal of this matter, with the campaign manager charging, quote, "Republicans court shopped for a ruling here. We're prepared for what comes next, and Virginians deserve both the right to vote and the chance to level the playing field." So we will see how this shakes out with other redistricting moves also under court challenge. I mentioned that the one seat that Republicans were able to redistrict from Democratic to Republican in the state of Missouri is being challenged in this case by a people's veto at the ballot box, which, of course, Republicans are challenging there, despite several hundred thousand signatures that were gathered to get this measure onto the ballot in November. So we will see. But there's the latest news on the gerrymandering wars for now.
The fight continues.
And again, while I hate gerrymandering personally, I also hate it when bad guys take advantage of legal loopholes to, you know, prevent the good guys, and specifically to prevent voters from having control of their own democracy. So, it's time for Democrats to step up and meet fire with fire, as Governor Gavin Newsom said when he was leading the charge to take on Trump's unprecedented GOP gerrymandering effort, first in Texas. And so far, Democrats do seem to be stepping up to do exactly that. Good for them. For change. Quick break, and we're back with Desi Doyen and the Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman, and this is the Bradcast. Hey, this is Brad. Here at the Bradcast and bradblog.com, we fight for election integrity all year around, like no other media outlet in the nation. But of course, we need your help to help us remain on your public airwaves and completely independent. Please help us continue that fight over your public airwaves by stopping by bradblog.com/donate. And thanks. Well, we began the show today with the news from the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists. Moving the clock forward toward midnight, the doomsday clock forward toward midnight to 85 seconds to midnight from last year's 89 seconds to midnight, citing, among other things, that they now include, that the scientists, the scientific group now includes, of course, climate change.
As well they should.
As as part of their calculations there. And we see in this storm over the past few days, another example of how the climate is just kind of going nuts, thanks to what we're doing.
Yep, buckle up.
Many stories related to that in our latest Green News Report.
As the monster storm moves out, the deep freeze settles in.
The danger is not over yet after deadly extreme winter storm pummels U.S.
It set a pretty dangerous precedent for public lands across the country.
House Republicans overturned ban on mining near Minnesota's pristine boundary waters. Plus,
Michigan taxpayers didn't create this problem, and they shouldn't have to foot the bill to address it.
Michigan Attorney General sues Big Oil for operating fossil fuel cartel.
All of those attempts at accountability and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
A huge swath of the country is now under an Arctic air mass. So, for the record, Greenland attacked first. Okay, they had it coming.
This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, we tried to warn about this last week, but boy, this storm across the entire country, by and large, is turning out to be quite deadly.
Yes, as we go to air, crews are working to restore electricity to hundreds of thousands of customers still without power in frigid temperatures in the wake of that deadly, record-breaking winter storm that dumped snow, sleet, and ice across dozens of states over the weekend. Serious impacts from ice accumulations, particularly in the south. At least 34 deaths have been linked to the storm so far. While the nation's electric grid mostly held up, experts say power outages are an ongoing concern as dangerous cold and ice persist, extending the risk of roof collapses, burst pipes, and more. Reuters reports that the extreme cold curtailed delivery of natural gas supplies as demand spiked, causing prices to soar and increasing electricity rates, while a lack of transmission lines hindered delivery of abundant wind energy from unaffected states.
Well, you know, wind energy causes cancer.
No, it doesn't.
Oh.
The reality of the storm forced the Trump Department of Homeland Security to pause mass layoffs of disaster response staff at the Federal Emergency Management Agency.
You mean they had to pause firing disaster response staff because there was a disaster?
Yes.
Who could have seen that coming?
Workers are now able to help the public with the storm's aftermath. Sometimes reality bites back. The layoffs are expected to resume, however, and because we live in stupid times, CNN reports that top officials ordered FEMA staff to avoid using the word ice in their public weather warnings because it might lead to online mockery of ICE, the agency.
Oh, God.
In other news, heads up, Minnesota.
Speaking of ICE.
House Republicans have passed a resolution to repeal the 20-year ban on toxic sulfide mining in the watershed of the state's pristine Boundary Waters Wilderness. It's unclear if the bill will be taken up in the Republican-controlled Senate. Critics warn that the move could open the door to destructive mining on other beloved protected lands. They say the economic benefits of mining aren't worth the risks of irreversible pollution in the Boundary Waters, vital to clean water supplies and the region's outdoor tourism economy.
Well, that mining money ain't going to make itself.
In Michigan, Attorney General Dana Nessel filed an antitrust suit in federal court against BP, Shell, Chevron, Exxon, and the American Petroleum Institute Trade Group late last week. The suit alleges that the companies spent decades conspiring together as a, quote, cartel to block clean energy alternatives and colluded to restrain competition from renewable energy and electric vehicles in order to maintain their domination of U.S. markets in violation of antitrust laws.
Because they did all of those things.
The suit says the oil companies used a host of tactics to hinder investment in renewable energy and deceived the public about the environmental and economic costs of fossil fuels and the viability of clean energy, leaving Michigan households and businesses with fewer options and higher bills. Here's Michigan Attorney General Dana Nessel.
These companies have made an untold billions and billions of dollars profiting off of their products, which did great harm to the state of Michigan. They embarked in this massive disinformation campaign so that they could continue to sell the exact same products that they knew were going to be doing so much damage over the course of time.
And finally, a federal judge ruled Friday that the Trump administration broke the law last year when it abruptly canceled $5 billion in funding appropriated by Congress dedicated to building out a national electric vehicle charging network. The judge vacated the program's suspension and permanently blocked the administration from canceling or withholding the funds.
Nice. Although I find it difficult to believe the Trump administration violated the law. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow, and share us planet-wide on the social medias, especially Blue Sky at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Oughta be a law against it.
Oughta be a law. Oughta be a law.
Particularly good news
it.
There about the judge overturning, basically saying that, no, Donald Trump does not have the right to claw back money that has already been appropriated under law by a previous president.
Yes.
That's good news. And one more piece of good news before we get out. Just breaking, two Republican senators now, Tom Tillis of South Carolina and Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, are calling for DHS Secretary Kristi Noem to resign. That as nearly 200 now over in the U.S. House are calling for her to be impeached.
Good.
Seems like her days may be numbered, but we'll see. All right, got to get out. Thanks to our producer, Desi Doyen, to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's show, please stop by bradblog.com. And download it anytime. While you're there, we're celebrating our 22nd anniversary. Please consider hitting a donate button to help us throughout our 23rd year of troublemaking and muckraking. You can drop me email if you like. I am bradcast@bradblog.com. And on the social medias, you will find me at The Brad Blog. We'll see you there. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
Yeah, 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 yeah.